Harriet Walter's an award-winning actor with experience in a wide range of roles on stage and film and television, but she's especially highly regarded for her work in the classics, notably Shakespeare. She's an associate artist with the RSC, for whom roles have included Portia, Viola, Beatrice, Lady Macbeth and Cleopatra. But she's recently been associated with Phillida Lloyd's groundbreaking all-female trilogy of Shakespeare's plays for the Donmar. In 2012, Harriet Walter played Brutus in Julius Caesar. In 2014, Henry IV. This season, she's added Prospero in The Tempest. All three productions can be seen at the Donmar's Temporary Theatre in King's Cross, before The Tempest goes to St Anne's Warehouse in Brooklyn, New York next year. She has a particular talent, too, for analysing and writing about her process as an actor. Her latest book, Brutus and Other Heroines, Playing Shakespeare's Roles for Women, was recently published by Nick Hearn Books. My name's Heather Neal, and I'm joined by Harriet Walter between performances of The Tempest to talk to Theatre Voice about this, about the process of working on The Tempest and on the other plays with Phillida Lloyd. Well, first of all, quickly, the premise is that all the plays are being acted by women prisoners in a women's prison.
Yes.
And all the actors, you've each chosen a particular prisoner to get to know a bit and base your character on.
Yes.
And yours is a particularly
interesting
one.
Everybody bar me is an invention. They're prisoner. We were just asked to find a backstory for our prisoner.
Right.
And that was when we started, when we did Julius Caesar first. And because I was playing Brutus, who's a sort of particular type of, he's an educated man, he's a lawyer, he's thought of in high regard by pretty much everybody, which is why the conspirators against Caesar need him on board, because he's the one who's going to be the most persuasive. But he's also closely allied to Caesar himself, so he's very torn. But because he's got this political ideal of democracy and the Republic of Rome, and much as he likes Caesar, believes in the Republic and hates the fact that Caesar's trying to be an autocrat and destroying their ideals, I thought I would look for or imagine someone who was a political idealist of my age group, who in maybe the 70s and 80s of the last century was part of an underground revolutionary movement, who was well educated, so I didn't have to put on some accent and pretend I was less educated than I was, because I wanted to be as authentically me as possible. And I googled and I found somebody who, among a couple of other people, seemed to answer fulfill those requirements. And she's a woman who's held in prison in America for being part of the underground movement in the 70s and being part of a bank robbery in which two policemen and a security guard were killed, not by her, she was the getaway driver, but she was nonetheless part of this fierce movement who are anti-everything. And she has been given a life sentence with no possibility of parole until she's 107. And she's my age, roughly, and she has become an extraordinary human being who I eventually, because out of total coincidence, a cousin of mine works with her in her prison.
Good heavens.
Which I didn't
that
know.
That is extraordinary.
I found out about her, and Phillida and I went to meet her, and so she's the only real person. Everybody else has just invented somebody who fits their character profile.
But they kind
of
stick with that person,
and they stuck with
it
through all the plays. Whereas mine sort of started as just an idea that would help me root myself in the prison world, where you wouldn't normally find someone like me who'd had all the advantages in life, you know.
So you've kept in touch with her. So this woman, Judy.
Yes,
Clark,
Judy Clark.
She has changed over these years, hasn't
she? Well, it became very clear that the third play should be The Tempest, which is about forgiveness, letting go of anger, coming to clarity, letting go of your past, letting go of your children, and all the depth of that and the journey she will have gone on to do all of those things in order to be able to get up in the morning. I cannot imagine what life must be like for her, but you know, you can't go on being angry forever, and if you know there's no hope of release, you've got to somehow wrestle with your demons and come out on top. Mm. And she really, really has. And so it became clear that The Tempest was a perfectly fitting play for her. And so it's become more a play about her than you know, it's just developed that way, which is interesting.
And you have taken the name Hannah.
Yeah.
And has Hannah changed as well over these four years?
She's not as far, she hasn't evolved as far as Judy has, but because she's still quite angry. But then at the end of The Tempest, she's really struggles to forgive, but she does and yeah, lightens her load, and that's fine. But no, I won't say Hannah's developed so much as Hannah is playing out three different stages of her life, because I'm still 66 every day. So playing Brutus, she's playing her youthful, more sort of maybe violent self. And yeah, then, and well, actually Brutus isn't violent, but she's idealistic. Then Henry is really tough. And so she's playing a tougher version of herself, and then the Prospero is more near her real heart. You know, it's actually where she is now. So yeah, that's quite interesting, rooting it in a real yeah, person that you can imagine.
His relationship with Miranda is very touching.
Yes,
And one remembers that Judy has a daughter who's only ever known her mother to be in prison.
Exactly,
and so that must be feeding into your...
Definitely, that has a whole resonance for imagining what, and letting them marry somebody else. I mean, we everyone in the audience, if they're of an age or have got a child, or you know, they know that time when you hand them over to their partner for life, or you know, you think so at the time, and that is a big stepping stone. So when I watch Miranda pledge herself to Ferdinand and say, I desire no companion in life but thee, you know, when you've spent all your life with her, yeah, it's a big moment for any parent giving that up. And so we play that out on stage, and I think, you know, Judy's like any parent, only multiplied by, you know, the particular circumstances she's in.
But you're Hannah as well, so you're man and woman. How do you think about that, being man and woman at the same time?
Well, the interesting thing is I hardly ever think of my gender when I'm playing Prospero.
Easy to forget, in the audience one forgets, I think.
And I think if anything's really... there's so much achieved by this exercise, but one of the things that's achieved is that people stop defining the characters by their gender, by their age, by their race, by their class, and we just listen to what they have to say and see what they want, and you know, the way they clash with one another because they both want different things, you know. And so the essence, the essential drama is all that takes you through, and you know, it's that, if that changes the audience's perception in some wonderful way, it certainly changed ours from the inside, and you know, that's in itself quite an achievement.
And prison life breaks in every now and again, rudely, as
yes,
it were.
Yes.
But you still manage to have a kind of magic about it, because The Tempest has got a magic about it, and there are a couple of very clever ways you do that. I mean, when you come to Our Revels Now Are Ended, that's very beautiful, just as you come to that speech.
Thank you. I think what happened, I've read that speech at funerals in a sort of rather lyrical, sort of nostalgic, sweet way. And I didn't really, until I came to do the play, see where it's placed in the play. Mm-hmm. And it's placed in this revelrous, lovely wedding with, you know, beautiful visions and dances.
Yes, it's very joyous the way
it's very
you do
beautiful
that.
And yeah, fun. And then it says Prospero, you know, is described as being in a sort of bad mood, and what's, you know, your father seems to be upset by something. And I'd never seen that he, you know, he's described by Shakespeare as being angry, you know, and in a state of disturbedness. And I'd only read those sort of those lines that we all know, you know, our revels now are ended, as far as, you know, how does it end? Sort of, we are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. That's the chunk we all know. Mm. Then he goes on to say, "Sir, I am vexed. Bear with my weakness. My old brain is troubled." Mm. You know, and so it you suddenly realise that he's upset about this, and he's upset about the pointlessness and the fact that we're all terminal, and, you know, it's a sad old man's observation. And within the prison, it becomes a sort of rage about the pointlessness of being trapped in, you know, having wasted so much of their life. And I'm sure Prospero probably feels that, 12 years isolated in this prison, you know.
Is there something about, you know, you feel a kind of common cause, that there's a lot of waste in prison, especially for women prisoners, as there is women in the theatre not being used?
Yes, that certainly comes out, because I think what what sort of burns behind this is the fact that, you know, Shakespeare is sort of, we define ourselves as a culture daily through Shakespeare, indirectly or directly, you know, and the England or the Britain that we are now is so different from his day. And we must include everyone who is here and calls themselves British, or anyone in humanity, really. But, you know, well, under our auspices, this is all we can control. And allow them to use these words, to express themselves through this language, and to be part of our culture, you know, rather than what you infuriatingly hear all the time is, you know, Shakespeare's not me, I don't understand it, he's not writing about me or for me. And that alienates and puts so many people off what is, I think, one of the great things about our culture, you know, the thing that when I think, God, who are we and what are we doing to ourselves, I think, oh, but there was Shakespeare, you know.
So you address him rather nicely at the end of your book.
Yes, yes.
He seems to be a friend of yours.
No, I just sort of wonder what he'd think of all this. But, you know, I've had lots of people say, you know, I think Shakespeare would have approved.
Yeah. Well, he was a man of the theatre.
Exactly.
He was about change.
Exactly. And we have changed hugely in the last 50 years, and, you know, even in my theatrical lifetime, it's changed, and you have to reach the audience that are here tonight. You have to communicate with the people in the audience tonight and not resurrect some style that you used 20 years ago.
One of the things you say in your book, which is interesting, is that you learned to come to your part via language rather than psychology, or alongside psychology.
Yes.
The language is really your main way in.
But it was my late discovery, you know, because I wasn't taught that terribly well at school. I wasn't, you know, looking back, I now see that I've always liked language, but I really didn't know that that was my routine, you know, until I started to practice it. So, and that having that memory makes me think that if you give, you know, we've taken stuff to schools, we've given people the chance to say the word, and in prisons, we've given people the chance to say those words and have them in their mouth and connect them with their thoughts and connect them with their feelings. And they suddenly feel they can do something they didn't know they could do. And I think that's what happened to me in a funny way, because for all my education, I didn't actually grasp Shakespeare or literature. It wasn't my big thing. Mm. So it sort of came to me through the act of playing the parts.
But you've taken it one stage further now, because you're so good at writing about it, expressing it for other people.
Thank you.
Do you get something extra out of that? Do you find you're finding even more insights into characters by writing about?
Yes, and I have to actually sort of steady myself when I sort of go off on a thread, and because it all follows rather nicely and neatly, and I go, no, hang on, is that actually the case? Are you just sort of dreaming that? Because language has a sort of, it has a power to sort of follow its own music, you know, and make things rather beautifully neat. And actually you have to think, actually, is that really the truth? I like having to be very disciplined about what I really think and have time to collect my thoughts and write them down, because on stage it's much more spontaneous and you know,
yes,
living.
I'm interested in that. You said another thing you said in the book about how, and certainly you mentioned particularly Beatrice, how there was a particular line, how you didn't know how you were going to do it each night, and you and the actor playing Benedict would experiment and change and react to each other and so you could be slightly different characters per night.
Yes.
Is that happening in this production? Does that happen?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm all for the spontaneity of what happens in the moment. And I think one of the enemies of acting is when you get a rigidity, or you get into a rut of music, or you say a line the same every night. because sometimes if you go through your lines before the show, you go, hey, I never thought about that. I mean, it's so deep, Shakespeare, you never get bored of it, you never exhaust it, unless you're playing a small part, let's face it, you run out of ideas with them. But if you're playing a massive part, there's always some new angle on it that happens, and the chemistry is never quite the same each night, and what you've been doing all day changes the way you feel, and the audience changes the way you feel, and it hits you in a different way. And I love that sparking between, because all the other actors do that too, and I love that. But I don't like it when a reviewer says something like, the way she said that line, and you go, oh God, but I'm never going to say it like that again. I hope you realised,
So you do read reviews?
Yes, I do, occasionally. Yeah. I do now. I'm more robust now.
Well, they're usually all right, aren't they? Pretty okay. Pretty good. Are you going to add another chapter to the book about Prospero?
I sort of don't want to. I thought about it, but I like the way I end it. I just end it with, I must prepare, which I think is a nice sort of, it's about, I've got to prepare to hand over to the young generation. I've got to prepare the part of Prospero. I've got to prepare for death. I mean, it's quite a nice way to end the book, and I don't want to necessarily tie it all up.
Well, the word freedom has a completely different sort of resonance in this production, doesn't it? You
Absolutely.
Hear it much more than you normally do, I
yes.
think.
Yes, and cell and prison, yeah. And, he uses those images all the time anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure, we could talk for another 2 hours, but thank you very much, Harry. Because you really are between two performances.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for finding time.
Great, thank you.